Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. Newsmakers is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wisi.org/donate or text WISI to 44321. This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Tuesday, April 1st marks an important election in Wisconsin and what some are calling a national referendum on President Trump's first few months in office. There are also some other key questions and races on your ballot that have gotten less attention. That's why we've asked two experts to join us today. We have Michael Wagner, who's professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison, and Henrik Schatzinger, who is professor of political science at Ripon College. Welcome to you both.
Great to be here.
Thank you, Lisa.
So when you think about this spring 2025 election here in Wisconsin, what's a word or phrase that comes to mind?
Money, negativity, democracy, those are all things that are kind of on the ballot in different sorts of ways. It's been an election season where there's been just huge spending, both from money the candidates raise themselves, but also from, the richest person in the world putting, tens of millions of dollars into the state Supreme Court race. So money has been a huge factor. Most of these ads have been extraordinarily negative. But the issues on the table are critical to the future of democracy in Wisconsin and the United States, from reproductive rights to voting rights to labor to redistricting, all kinds of things that are just hugely important for
us
to think about.
We'll get into that. Money, negativity, critical, are those the same words? What are the words for you?
Yeah, absolutely. But I would add another word, which is crucial, because I think we're talking about the direction of the state Supreme Court, and as Michael alluded, there are very important issues that will reach the courts. And at the same time, you mentioned in your introduction, it's also a referendum on the Trump administration, so it could stall in some shape or form the national agenda. So I think both parties see it as a crucial election.
So why do you think a spring election in Wisconsin is getting so much national attention?
Yeah, because it is the first big election since the November elections. And so we haven't had other really big test cases of how also the national agenda is sort of being perceived by voters. And so now we have a real test case. And of course, you have Elon Musk spending not just a few million, but to some estimates, perhaps up to $20 million in a race, which we also have never seen before. So all of this combined, and including, of course, controversies about voter incentives. And so there's so many things that have come together in this election that have created this national attention.
Are you surprised by the national attention? Could you have predicted this a year ago?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for all the reasons that were just said, plus the fact that it's Wisconsin. This is an epicenter of American politics. It's always a swing state. It's a state that has one of the most liberal and one of the most conservative U.S. senators. It's a place that, has elected very conservative and very liberal governors. It's gone for Donald Trump and not for Donald Trump in presidential elections. And so it's a bellwether. It's a place where things are tried and tested and then applied to other states, both in terms of campaign strategy, but also in governing. And so not at all surprising to see Wisconsin being a focus here.
We are the guinea pigs for the country, apparently. Obviously, there's been a lot of attention on that state Supreme Court race. The two candidates have kind of similar resumes, but they're supported by polar opposite allies and causes. I'll start with you. What do you think are conservative-aligned Brad Schimmel's kind of main strengths and weaknesses in this race?
He's a stronger candidate than Dan Kelly, who ran the last couple of times from the ideological right, more or less, in a nonpartisan, in name only, really, race. He's won statewide elections in Wisconsin. He has experience both in terms of campaigning and fundraising and doing the work that would be, the kind of thing that gets done.
And he started a year
court.
Ago
and
running.
So he's been doing this a while. There was less hand-wringing about who the candidate from the right would be this time, which I think also served him well. you know, on the negative side, he's made some statements that haven't played terribly well with a lot of constituencies about women and emotions and decision making, which he's, you know, directly made about members of the current Supreme Court who would be his colleagues if he ends up winning. And so I think that has hurt him. And also being tied to Elon Musk and this, you know, money from a non-citizen billionaire who has financial interests in the state that he wants a judge to rule on, those things are not helping Schimmel in this race.
Do you agree with those strengths and weaknesses that he's assessed for Mr. Schimmel?
Yeah, I think experience clearly stands out. I don't think anybody would say that he's unqualified based on his on his resume, and not at all. I think he has a very strong resume. I think looking as a political scientist, I look at it from a, yes, you have the support from your party's base, but what about those moderate, those swing voters? And can he have that appeal, right, to them? But I think Susan Crawford has the same issues, to be honest, on the other side. Both have solidified parties' bases, surrounding them, but who is going to win the people who are more in the middle? That's
and
the question.
And in Wisconsin, we know those are sometimes the most important people. So what about Susan Crawford on strengths and weaknesses? Are there other things to point out?
Yeah, I think she also has a very strong legal expertise, and she does bring in the progressive credentials that the party would or really wants to see. So, but she also has dealt with issues that would likely appear before the Supreme Court, ranging from election law to administrative law to civil rights issues. All of those are sort of hot button issues, and she has experience with those types of issues.
Any other strengths or weaknesses for Susan Crawford?
Well, I think she really looks a lot like the successful state Supreme Court races from the left in recent years. She's a lot like Judge Kurofsky, who's now on the state Supreme Court, and Judge Protasiewicz, who's now on the state Supreme Court. And so her pedigree, her orientation toward the law, her experience are all quite similar to a winning hand. So that is a strength, but it also could be a weakness in that it's not very differentiating in some ways to some voters. And I think that the advertising in the campaign is certainly trying to paint her as soft on crime. And while that's not an issue that the state Supreme Court deals with a ton, we don't get to choose, and neither do the candidates get to choose, what factors voters have in their mind when they're deciding who it is they would like to represent them.
What about those ads that are, we see them on both sides. The candidates are either hard on crime or they're soft on crime. Is that at all important for justice?
It is. There is a reason why this issue of public safety and the, being tough on crime versus being soft on crime really is a standard theme across judicial elections, right? No matter what kind of elections, because it is an important issue to voters. And so I was just looking at a few quotes. Building America's Future says, Susan Crawford, putting criminals over your kids. At the same time, Susan Crawford in her own ad said at some point, if you want the cities to be safe, don't vote for Schimmel. So both are focusing on the crime issue because it is often in voters' minds, even if those issues may not reach the courts as frequently
as voters are thinking about. A lot of the reporting has talked about how this race will determine the ideological balance of the court. But as a typical voter, how will this race affect my daily life? Why should I care about this?
There are a number of issues that the Wisconsin State Supreme Court is likely to make a decision on in the next year or so. And what's really kind of amazing is that we're going to have a number of these elections over the course of the next 5 years. There's a lot of these happening in a row. And so it could be that in each case, the ideological balance of the court, is what's at stake. But questions about who represents us and where they are, like redistricting, questions about labor and organizing rights, questions about reproductive rights, questions about what we can teach in schools. These are all kinds of things that may make their way, or certainly in some cases will make their way, to the Wisconsin State Supreme Court over the next year and over the next decade. And so this race puts a person on that bench for this 10-year period where all of these issues are going to be decided.
Michael's just highlighted those key issues: abortion, Act 10, union rights, election law, redistricting. Is there any one of those issues that you think will be driving turnout in this race?
Yeah, that's a great question. And if I look at this list, I'll be honest, abortion still stands out to me, even though we talked about it two years ago. But 2 years ago, everything was a little bit more abstract in terms of how it was discussed about privacy, about freedom and sort of broader concepts, but now it's gotten real, and we have some experiences, and we see how it affects families from our low income households, and so I think it has become more concrete. So I still think of all those issues, abortion still stands out to me. We could also mention the governor's partial veto power. Not that this drives really turnout, but this is another important issue that the court will face.
I think that's exactly right. But just to jump on the abortion issue for a second, there's a lot of survey evidence that we've conducted at the Center for Communication and Civic Renewal in Wisconsin in 2018, 20, 22, and 24. And increasingly, abortion is an issue people find to be more important, and people are developing more entrenched attitudes about, especially on the choice side, which I think is one reason we've seen success from the more liberal candidates in state Supreme Court races, that they've Protasiewicz and this go around with Judge Crawford are really hitting that issue in their advertising and campaigning. That is an issue that seems to be motivating voters.
We saw last week President Obama endorse Susan Crawford. We know that President Trump has endorsed Brad Schimmel. Is there evidence that Trump voters will turn out for Brad Schimmel like they did for President Trump in November?
Yeah, if we look at maybe the 2022 midterms, for example, and we have some historical record, right? And we do know that Trump endorsements matter to get especially those low propensity voters, the ones who are non-habitual voters, to get those out to vote. So if we look at certain counties such as Marathon, Washington, St. Croix, those are where we have seen that actually turnout increases when Trump steps up to the plate and endorses candidates.
Do you think Brad Schimmel needs those Trump voters to turn out on April 1st in order to win?
I think he does. And I think he needs those Trump voters to kind of turn a blind eye to one of the reasons they like Trump but may not like Schimmel, is that he's really being tied in advertising from the Crawford side to Elon Musk. And part of Trump's appeal is to say, I'm so rich I can't be bought. And part of the advertising against Schimmel is he's being bought by Elon Musk. And so to the extent that Trump voters buy that argument, it could keep some of them home or even turn some of them to Crawford. And so it's important for him to push back against that to be successful.
He doesn't have much time left to do that. So when you look at the landscape of the state Supreme Court, who has more to lose in this April 1st state Supreme Court election? Is it the conservatives or the liberals?
Well, the liberals currently, have the control, if you will. And so therefore, they have a lot to lose. At the same time, given the great sort of national effort that's being made by Republicans, they also have a lot to lose, not only because of, the control of the court, but again, because of the agenda that the administration has been pushing nationally. So in my opinion, both sides have a lot to lose, hence why we have seen this unprecedented spending in this race.
Speaking of unprecedented spending, expected to top $100 million, beating the record that was set just 2 years ago in the last state Supreme Court race. How do you explain all of this money in this race?
Well, first, it's easier to spend the money than it used to be, and so that's one reason we see more of the money. Another is Wisconsin's feature as a bellwether state. Another is that it's a closely divided court. These are all reasons I think we're seeing this kind of unprecedented spending in this race, and it's just, going to, I guess, depending on your point of view, get better or worse, but grow over the course of the next few races that we have in the state Supreme Court as
well. You think we'll break future records?
It's a good bet.
We see these big billionaires, Elon Musk, George Soros, J.B. Pritzker, we're thinking of all these millions of dollars coming into the state. Why do these out-of-state billionaires care about what happens in Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's also a really good question, because the question is maybe what's different about those specific individuals, right, compared to other donors or the public at large. And what one thing we do know about them is they are often more on the, not fringes, but more on the outset of the party spectrum. So they're more extreme. And so what they can, when they get into these races, they often care about the social issues, the culture war issues, like the abortion issue. Plus, our campaign finance laws really allow just very few individuals to really make such big of a difference. And so, you know, I think all of this leads them to get involved.
I think this is actually related a bit to your question earlier about who has more to lose. I think you're quite right that both sides have a lot to lose. But right now, after the 2024 presidential election, the Democrats are really in the wilderness nationally. And there's a lot of existential and literal angst, both in the party among elected officials and amongst rank-and-file Democrats. And this, you know, as we've talked about before, is really the first big featured race in the Trump administration. And so I think from a perspective of how we perceive the next few years, I think Democrats have more to lose in this race than Republicans, just in terms of people's willingness to give and be activist and those sorts of things. I think losing this would be emotionally difficult for lots of Democrats to handle.
We've talked a lot about Elon Musk here. He's a polarizing figure, clearly. He's been heading up the Doge project for the Trump administration, which is about slashing the federal government. So given that, based upon who wins on Tuesday, will it be fair to view the result as either endorsing or rebuking the Trump administration's early actions?
Voting is a blunt instrument. It's not a scalpel. And so I don't know that we can know for sure that it's a rebuke of the Trump administration or not. Wisconsin is a state where races are decided on razor-thin margins no matter which side wins. I think that there's a signal, and I think if Crawford wins, it's a signal that, you know, people are less happy with the early days of the Trump administration. But I don't know that it's something where we should say Crawford wins and that means it's a blanket rejection of President Trump, nor should we conclude that if Schimmel wins, it's a blanket endorsement of everything Trump is doing. It is that for many people, but we're really talking about the folks who can go either way, which is a relatively small group of people.
What message will this race send to either party about their strategy for the midterms? Will it kind of be a blueprint for the midterms?
Perhaps. In terms of blueprint, I think you know, to say something positive about this race is, we just compare sort of turnout in this election compared to, like, let's say 2 years or even 10 years ago, it's just basically from 10 years ago, it has doubled, right?
So, like, already voting.
Yeah, so the voter engagement is much higher than it used to be. So I think we also need to take this into consideration and say, hey, there's something positive. People actually do care much more than they used to be about this. But I think in some ways the issues that we have mentioned, the abortion issue, redistricting affects many, you know, affects every state. And so all of these labor laws, I mean, all of these things have come up in many other states. So I think in that sense, it is kind of, I think, a blueprint for what we're going to see 2 years from now.
Do you see a strategy for midterms coming out of this election?
I think that party leaders will take lessons from this race and make strategic choices. Whether that's smart or not, I think, is another question. But people tend to overinterpret these kinds of races and what it is they mean. But the voters of Wisconsin are different than the voters in lots of other states, even lots of other swing states. And so we tend to be a little bit more divided in terms of our partisanship and our attitudes about different kinds of groups in Wisconsin than folks in Pennsylvania and Michigan and North Carolina. And so applying these lessons broadly is probably not the right strategic decision, but it will be some evidence for folks who are looking for evidence to decide how to spend all of this money for the upcoming midterms.
Of course, there's another big statewide race on the ballot on April 1st. It's the superintendent of the State Department of Public Instruction. This is also supposed to be a nonpartisan race, so we won't be seeing a D or an R after either of these candidates' names. It's Jill Underlie, who's the incumbent, current DPI superintendent, versus Brittany Kinzer, who has been supported by the Republican Party she's challenging. What key differences should voters be waiting, Henrik, would you say, when they look at these two candidates?
Sure. At some point, it is still sort of an old sort of voucher versus sort of public education race at the same time.
Brittany Kinzer supporting school choice and
exactly
vouchers.
Exactly, school choice and vouchers, and Kinzer said, you know, she wants to prioritize reading, writing, math, and science, and she wants to focus on meaningful careers for our children. So there's that. Underly has focused a lot on school funding and how she wants to really increase, and she has said we have been underfunding our schools for a very long time, and so she has really put a lot of time and energy to say that we really need to increase the budget for education.
Something that's a little bit different this time around is incumbent Jill Underly did not have the backing of the state teachers union, WEAC, in the primary in this race. Now, they have endorsed her in this general election, but do you think that this is a sign, will teachers be enthusiastic about turning out for Jill Underly like they have typically been for the incumbent in the past?
I think that she benefits from the state Supreme Court race being on the ballot as well. I think that If this was the only game in town, it might be a little more difficult for her to generate enthusiasm from teacher union supporters who weren't so wild about her. But I think, you know, you don't get to vote for the candidate you want in an ideal world. You're forced to vote between the people who are on the ballot. You can always write someone in, but that person's not going to be the one who gets elected in this case. And so I think she really benefits from having this other high-profile race to help turn people out.
So you think Crawford voters will end up ticking their ballot for Jill Underly?
Very few of them will cross and split their ticket. I mean, it's not really a split-ticket race because, as you say, it's nonpartisan, but in both races, it's really teams without uniforms running.
Republican Speaker Robin Voss has publicly endorsed Brittany Kinzer in this race. He actually said recently that, and she's a school choice advocate, as mm-hmm. you have pointed out, he says that she has the best chance of winning of any GOP-supported candidate in a generation. Would you agree with that? Is she a pretty strong candidate for the Republicans?
I actually would agree with that. And the reason is that, she is a self-proclaimed moderate, and so she... They are not putting sort of a more extreme person out there on the other side. At the same time, she has done some strong fundraising, outspending and fundraising Underly. So there is that. She's also done lots of campaign events. Underly hasn't really focused that much on her incumbency record, incumbency strength. And so from that standpoint, I think she is stronger. Now, is it going to be enough? That's the big question. I think she might sort of underperform a little bit to compared to Crawford, but I don't know if it is going to be enough.
If Kinzer wins, that would be a pretty big upset in Wisconsin, wouldn't it, in this particular race?
Yeah, historically, it would be quite the upset. And I think that Speaker Voss is right. I think this is the best chance they've had in a generation to capture this particular seat.
One issue that's been a little bit prominent in this race is related to the national cut scores for student test scores. The Republican legislature passed a bill. It went to the governor's desk. The governor vetoed it. He does not support this change. This was a change made by Superintendent Underly mm-hmm. to what her opponent has said is lowering the standards for student test scores. Do we think voters are paying attention to this issue? It seems pretty in the weeds.
It is kind of in the weeds, and I don't think it's a really decisive issue for most voters, but I think it is an issue that helps Kinzer in this race. There was a Marquette poll that said, you know, 60% of the public basically agrees that these standards should not have been lowered. From that standpoint, I think it's an argument for Kinzer, and she said she would restore the high standards that the students and the state kind of needs and deserves. So that's how I look at this issue.
At the national level, we're seeing President Trump dismantle the U.S. Department of Education, saying he wants to put the control for education back to the states. Does that mean that if he's successful in that, that this state superintendent will have more control, perhaps historic level of control over public education?
I don't think so. The states already basically control their education in most respects. There are some national standards after No Child Left Behind in the second President Bush administration that need to be met. And that's part of what some of the controversy, I suppose, is over in this particular race. But schools are quite locally controlled already. And I think what will really change if the president is successful at dismantling or at least defunding the Department of Education will be that the critical connective tissue that exists between the state and the federal government will go away, and it'll make the person who wins this race's job all the much harder because there'll be less people to coordinate with in terms of the different kinds of, you know, financial assistance and programming and student loans and Pell Grants and all the kinds of things that you need this kind of walk between the federal and state level to make happen. That's going to be really hard. And so I think, you know, in many ways, people who are running for, you know, positions like state superintendent are entering into a harder job than maybe even they started campaigning for before this election.
Interesting. There's also a state constitutional amendment on everyone's ballot on April 1st. It asks whether the state constitution should be amended to require voters to present a valid photo ID in order to vote in any election, subject to certain exceptions. You know, voters may be thinking, I already have to show a photo ID when I vote. Isn't this already the law? Why is this amendment necessary? Why is it on my ballot?
And it is already the law, right? So the question then becomes, yeah, why is it on the ballot? And to me, well, there are two reasons. Perhaps one is it's more of a signal to the party's base and to mobilize some people to get them out to vote. So that's, I think, it's always a consideration when you have sort of referenda on a ballot like this. And then, of course, you know, there is always this issue, like, will Democrats maybe try to repeal it? If you have a referendum, that makes it, of course, very, very difficult to do so. So those are the reasons why I think it's on there.
There's also a lot of local races and local referenda on the ballot. I think 1/5 of the state school districts have referendum for additional funding. That's when they go back to local taxpayers and ask them to raise their taxes to fund schools. Is this just the norm in Wisconsin from now on? We're going to have our school districts come back to us and referenda on our ballots?
In the current funding environment that most school districts live in, this is really the new normal of coming in and asking voters for additional resources. It's happening all over the state. It's not necessarily driven by the size of the district or even the overall economic health of a particular area. Schools all over are finding that they have to do this, and so I suspect that'll continue.
So unless the legislature makes some change, expect this to be on your ballot in the future.
Right.
As we're wrapping up our show here, I want to ask you both, what will you be watching for on election night?
Sure. So, of course, everybody looks at turnout, and the turnout question is an interesting one because it can be quite confusing how to interpret all of this rush and early voting, right? Are those actually new voters or those voters who just come out, you know, this time and just vote early? So we don't have really good answers. So one thing I would look for is, yes, everybody pays attention to Dane County and Milwaukee and the WOW counties, but what about sort of northern and western Wisconsin, where we haven't seen as much of early voting that maybe Trump or that Republicans would like to see? So for me, this is something that I will pay attention to.
Other parts of the state where we might see whether or not those Trump voters actually came out for
exactly.
The spring election. Anything in particular you'd be watching for?
Well, I think as a nerd who likes election spreadsheets, I'll have two numbers up across each of the counties. Percentage who voted for Trump in the last election and percentage who voted for Protasiewicz in the last state Supreme Court election, and look at how each candidate in the state Supreme Court race is holding their voters, so to speak. And that'll, I think, give us an early indication of how this, you know, may go after all the counting is eventually done, because it takes a while, given our election laws here in Wisconsin.
And if you could predict, what do you think the lead story will be the day after the election?
Obviously, it depends on the outcome. If Republicans have a good night, it'll be a story about maybe how Trump prevails and how Elon Musk's sort of gamble pays off, right? At the same time, if Democrats win, they can say, oh, after the stinging defeat in November, they're back, right? They're roaring back, and Democrats sort of see this rebound in Wisconsin. So obviously, it depends which way it's going to go.
Michael, you're writing the headlines day after election. What are the options?
I'd have three ready: Democrats reinvigorated, Republicans on a roll, and split decision.
All right, that sounds good. That will be our final word. Thank you both for a great conversation today.
Thank you, Lisa.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming. where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.